You're listening to Grassroots, www.innovationstudios.com. I'm Marcus, and I'm back for some more Q&A on week 46 of the Q&A. But as you know, it's been spread over a few years. But now I'm looking to get another good run at it. There's going to be at least another four or five episodes in this series. I hope you've all been very, very well, and you've been looking after yourselves and enjoying the sunshine. We'll get straight on to your questions in a minute. I just wanted to say a couple of quick hellos. The first hello was to Terry Stewart, who's back in the UK and back gigging regularly most weekends and stuff like that. Nice to have you back, Terry. You had a few years out in Spain. And the other hello is to a dear friend of mine. I haven't seen him in a while, Jamie France, who's at the moment he's in the Jewelers, but he runs his own podcast and does his own things as well out there on the jamiefrance.com, I believe. And he's been busy, as I say, with the Jewelers. He's got a new album that's out very, very soon. He's been working with people on that. I haven't heard it yet, and I've not caught up with Jamie in a while, but I sent him a message the other day just to see how he was, and he told me to keep up the good work on my podcast, so he must have listened in. Maybe, hopefully, I'll get him in as a guest one day. But I know he's doing really, really well, so it's nice to correspond with him. Let's get straight to your questions. I've got a few to get through this week. This first one is from Andy and Sarah. And they say, "Hi, Marcus. I just wondered, what's the best way for us to prepare for a new project?" Depending on what it is, obviously. If it's a live show, you need to work out your songs and your set and your running orders and your timings and stuff like that. If it's, say, a new album, then obviously you've got to work on the writing the songs and stuff like that. But as usual, the best way to prepare is just as solidly as you can. Put the groundwork in. I've talked about this before. If you're going in as a band or you're going in to record an album, do all of the soul searching and the head scratching before you go in. Make sure that you've got these songs, they've been played through a fair few times, and that you know where everything is, you know what your parts are, you know where the song breaks down and kicks back in again. You have lyrics worked out, you have harmonies worked out, you have, you know, breakdowns and counts and stuff like that worked out. You've rehearsed it. There's rehearsing a song for live work, and then there's rehearsing a song for studio work. So if a song breaks down live, and you're waiting for the band to come back in, everybody turns around to the drummer. But when you're in the studio doing that, the drummer's already recorded his drums. So what you need to do is to rehearse the song through and have your drummer just count through any breaks, which can then be taken out later on, edited out later on. So it's being studio ready and live ready. Live ready is it's very, very similar, in as much as you put the work in as a band or to be fair, as a solo artist, whatever. But it's important that if you're going into a studio for a new project, that you've prepared that for as many eventualities as you can. You don't want to go in and suddenly the song breaks down and you're thinking, when does it come back in again? You've already spoken to your drummer and said, I need you to count through that before your fill that brings the band back in. So I'll tell you what, I'll give you an example of that. If anybody's ever tried to play along with a song Black Dog by Led Zeppelin, that was recorded, it seems, by a fairly live band in the studio looking at each other, because occasionally there's a count from John Bonham that brings the song back in. But most of the time, it just comes in when they felt like it. And also, I think it's Master of Puppets, Metallica. There's no exact timing on that. It's four guys in a studio kind of playing their parts through and looking at each other and getting it tight. It wasn't layered. We talked about studio work being layered before. If you're working on your own, your drums first. Then I like to do a couple of guitars first and then the bass. But the correct, if you like, the proper way of building a track is that you do your drums first, then your bass, then your guitars, then your acoustic guitar, and then your vocal. But you can build it how you want. It's just that's kind of the way it's kind of always traditionally been. So what you've got to do, Andy and Sarah, is to prepare yourselves the best you can, in as much as you know what the lyrics are, what the songs are, pretty much what the running orders are as well. Also, have a think about the songs that you have in your set and where they're likely to be. So sometimes you might just type out the whole lot And you might say, let's say you've got 40 songs and you put a one or a two next to them. So let's say that you've got two songs. One of them is REM, Losing My Religion. The other one is Dance the Night Away by the Mavericks. Chances are, if you're out on a Friday and Saturday night at the Batley Working Men's Club, I've never been to the Batley Working Men's Club, and I've certainly never met Fred and Marjorie there. But as I say, I do, for some reason, I imagine it being your typical kind of club. If Andy and Sarah, you're out on a Saturday night, chances are, if you've got an REM Losing My Religion track, it's going to be first half. If you've got people dancing at the end, you're going to do Dance the Night Away. So go through and have a look at the songs and put one, two, and work out where you want the songs to be. Quite nice. Sometimes you finish the first half with a slow one, finish the end of the night with a fairly slow one, and then you kind of piece together your set list depending on, you know, where you think the songs are, either in the first set or the second set. And then what you have a look is you might have 40 songs and you've got 20 written down for the first set and 20 written down for the second set. And then you have a look at it and go, okay, so you then separate that and you go, okay, early or late, E or L. So if you've got something like Rocket Man, Elton John, it could be late in the set, could be the last song, or it could be very, very early in the set before people are dancing. If all of a sudden, you know, you've got a full dance floor, you don't want it to empty. So sometimes your set will change on the night. But as a rule, look at a song where it can be in the set. The trick then is very much like if people are working in bars or people are working in supermarkets and stuff like that. They rotate the stock, which means the new stock goes at the back. So if you're bringing songs in, I've always felt that once you've got pretty much your first half songs or second half songs, whatever, it's always good to bring strong stuff in that can go at the back. But what happens is you might bring in a really, really strong belting song that goes towards the end of the night. That then moves the earlier stock forward and puts a really strong second half song in the first half. And then one of your songs from the first half that's replaced becomes a spare to be sort of, you know, as part of your set list that you can throw in there and again. And then you bring in another strong song and another strong song. I always believe that you build from the back, you stock from the back, you bring in the end of the night songs, the more that goes on. And because of that, the start of the night songs become stronger as you build that. You're never going to see an Oasis tribute walk straight out and do Wonderwall. You're never going to see an Oasis tribute walk straight out and do Don't Look Back in Anger. But sometimes you get Columbia, sometimes you're always, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get Some Might Say towards the first, in the first half of it. But by the time you're going to Stop Crying Your Heart Out, you're not going to do that early in the set. Oasis might, but they can do what they want when they want. If you're entertaining people on a Friday or a Saturday night, you're not going to get McFly walk straight out first song and do Five Colours and a Hair, because it's the one that everyone's waiting for. Make them wait. Let them wait. People are happy to wait as long as what you're filling in with until they get to the songs that they want, if you like, are still fairly strong. You know that you're going to see a band live, a professional band, you know, a signed band, a legendary band. They're going to open with the first single off the new album, right? Pretty much 9 times out of 10, unless it's a greatest hits tour. So it always surprised me when I saw like the Counting Crows, they had Mr. Jones, you know, third song. And when I saw James years ago, they opened up with Sit Down and went straight into She's a Star and then went straight into Laid. And I thought, well, there's the three songs. They've got another 45 minutes to do. So I just buggered off and watched James Brown in the dance tent at V98. Waiting for Roachford, Cuddly Toy, which they did at the end, where it should be. And I filled everything else until that point. So when you're building a set, Andy and Sarah, sorry this happens sometimes, think about the songs that you've got, the order that they're in. If you're rehearsing for studio work, make sure that all the counts and everything like that for the drummer, make sure you spoke to your drummer, or you've programmed them into the drum machine so they can be cut out later on. And then you just prepare by adding stuff on that then sometimes can be taken away. Throw too much at it and then take some stuff away. Don't go into a studio or go into a project with not enough, hoping that it will happen. Turn up on a Friday and Saturday with too many songs. Because if you suddenly turn up, and I've been there, and they suddenly say, no, you've got to do another half an hour, or if we give you another 100 quid, will you do another half an hour? And you haven't got enough songs, right? So stock from the back. Make sure you've got strong stuff. Because people ain't going to say, look, can you do an extra half an hour, but can you do it at the start of the night with a load of old dirge that nobody really cares about? If they're going to want you to do extra at the end, they're going to want half an hour at the end. It's like when people say to me, I'm not a smoker, but when people say to smokers, that's taking, you know, all those cigarettes you smoke, taking 4 years off your life. Yeah, it's taken 4 years off your life when you're 86. It's not taking 4 years off your life when you're 12 or 16 or 21. It's taking it off when you're 86. So you stock from the back. I don't know how I got onto that, by the way, but I thought in my mind, I was just thinking, it's not like it's a time in your life where you're just, you know, flying off to Ibiza and doing 18 to 30 stuff and things like that. You go, don't forget, these 4 years, you've got to stop now because these are all those cigarettes you smoked. You've got 4 years now. You've got to just sit in your armchair and do nothing. Then you can live the rest of your life. So you stock from the back and then make sure at the end of the night, that's when they're going to ask you for more. And you've got to make sure you've got more by stocking from the back. That's how you should prepare, in my opinion. And that's all it ever is on my podcast. Thank you for tuning in, by the way. Andy and Sarah, good luck with your project. Please let me know how you're doing. Drop me a message in a few weeks, either on Twitter at Innovation Studios, either email innovationstudiosuk@gmail.com, or go to www.innovationstudios.com and follow the links there to let me know. There might even be a number on there. Drop me a text message. I don't care. As long as I'm not gigging. If I'm gigging and my phone beeps halfway through, I won't be happy, but then it's up to me. I should have it on flight mode. Always have your phones on flight mode, or your tablets on flight mode, or your laptops, or whatever it is you use. Put them on flight mode. You don't want messages halfway through your show while you're trying to do that. There's a little tip from me. Innovation Studios has all the tools you would need to bring your music to life. Get in touch to book a free consultation. This is our opportunity to chat about your music, listen to demos, and if you're unsure, find which pricing would fit you best. There are no hidden costs. Once a booking is made and price agreed, there are no further hidden charges. Our team at Innovation Studios are professional musicians, and we know that sometimes a recording may run into an extra hour or an extra day. Your original price will stand. Guidance that will help you make a great sounding album at an affordable price. www.innovationstudios.com. Got a Twitter question from Edgar. Edgar says, hi Marcus, do you have any advice on when you're making an album? Hi Edgar. Well, if you've been listening to the last 10 minutes, you'll know pretty much the answer to that, Edgar. But as you've taken the time, like nobody else has this week, by the way, to message me on Twitter after I told you last week it was an option, I mean, honestly, then I will answer it very quickly. Just make sure you're prepared. If you're working on an album, make sure you're prepared. And also, you know, when you're making an album, put a preparation in. Unless there's a desperate time frame, then don't make an album until you're ready. So what I mean by that is don't go into a studio with 9 songs on Monday, hope to have the album done by the Sunday, and hope to write something so you've got 10. Because all you'll end up with is what we call song 10. Which basically means you've got 9 belters and you need to write another one to round everything off. Because some people, and I've come across it quite a lot, I don't know why it is, but if you're one of these people that do it, when I say it, you'll know what I mean. You can't have your stereo or your TV or, you know, songs or anything like that. They've got to be on an even number. No one's ever going to put £49 of petrol in their car or £39 of petrol. Most people, if they've got a telly on 20, they'll go to 22. They won't go to 21. I don't know why that is. I'm not quite sure. Jennifer has that. My daughter has this. So if I turn the stereo down once, she turns it down another one. If I turn it up once, it has to be even numbers. I don't know why. It's that we can change the world from our little corner. This is why you've got England playing, you know, in Australia in a friendly in Melbourne at the MCG in a football match. And you've got a bloke in Benfleet at the Tar Pots, standing on a table going, "Get in there, Harry!" He thinks that shouting at the TV from that far away is going to make a difference. But we all do it. I've been at darts matches where we go, just scratch. He misses when you scratch. Scratch. And everyone at the table starts scratching. What is that about? I didn't scratch, by the way, because I didn't want him to miss. But, so don't have a song 10. Make sure you have everything ready before you go in. Or just record the album with 9 songs. Nobody's ever got shot for that. But then again, there's that thing again, 9 songs. Oh, I don't know, should have 10. Want to round it up. Don't book your studio until you've got your 10 songs. If you do book a studio time, book it with enough advance time that you can work on those songs as a band or as a unit or as an individual and make sure you've done it. I've talked about this before, that I make an album 4 times. Initially, the demos, as I get an idea, I make a demo with it and then it adds to what I've already got. At the moment, for the next album, I've got 4 songs, I think, maybe 3 or 4. I've got a couple of little ideas, but I've got about 3 or 4 songs. Not completed, just little germs of an idea, a little maggot of an idea that hopefully will grow. So I demo that, maybe put a stick, a bit of a guide vocal on it, and then I'll have eventually, probably realistically about 2 or 3 months from now, maybe 6 months from now, because I'm not in a rush with this album. I've got a couple of other things going on. I'll have 10 really rough demos. I'll then listen to them for a few weeks, have a listen through, make a few notes on them. Then I'll go back in and I'll make the album again. But this time I'm making the demos with maybe new drums, and I'm not just using what I've already got. I reprogram the drums, redo the drums, redo the bass lines, because I might have these new ideas, these new things I want to bring on. Sometimes I might use the original drums, but let's say hypothetically 9 times out of 10, I then remake the album, but quickly, you know, maybe over the 2 or 3 weeks. Then I listen to those demos for a while. And then maybe after 2 or 3 months, I listen to it again. And I'll go in again and remake the album maybe over a month. And this time I'll add backing vocals and a few other things as well. Very, very loose, but so it's all there and everything is growing. And then I'll let that fester for a few months and then I'll go away. And then the fourth time I'll come in and make the album properly. Pay attention to every single last detail. The reason I say that, because people might argue that, well, why, if you know the song's really, really inside out, why aren't you paying attention to the detail initially and get the album made the first time? And the answer to that is that because if I'm working on my own, see, I'm a solo artist. The Matching is a band that I formed, but it's not. It's all the playing. Sorry to burst your bubble, but it's just me. So I have to be able to step away from that. I can't go into a recording studio and listen to the songs go round and round and round and work on stuff and bounce ideas off other musicians. I pretty much have to listen to it and then say, okay, let's tweak the bass on that. Let's tidy that up. So I work very much on that basis. And that's why I make an album sometimes 3 times, depending on what needs what, but usually 4 times. The process is about, realistically, about 8 to 9 months. So I've got, for instance, at the moment, I've got about 4 or 5 songs. I've got some writing to do. And then towards the end of this year, I might have my songs, I'll see. And then at the start of next year, I'll go in probably January and start getting these, listening through these demos, making some notes. And then I'll go in again in maybe March and then spend most of March remaking the album. Listen to it for April and May, go back in June. Listen to it for a month, go back in July and August, and make the album, finish it, and then get it all ready at the end of August and release it on the September the 16th, which for some reason, 3 of the 4 albums have been released on that date. And I don't know why, but I kind of feel it's quite a cool thing to just always release your albums on the same date. I don't know why. And that'll be 2024, which will be 3 years since the last album. But what I'm getting at is that don't just write your 10 songs, go into the studio, bang them through, because all that happened is 6 months from then or 3 months from then, you'll be listening through and thinking, why didn't I do that? Or you'll change it. So what you play live will be nothing like what you recorded, because you'll be happier with your new live version. I always think that unless you've got a record company breathing down your neck saying, we need this album out by whenever, sometimes it's nice to say, look, we're going to book some studio time in June, but you know what? I'm going to look at it in September. We're going to have 3 extra months. Although everybody's sort of chomping at the bit to get in the studio, you've got 3 extra months to work on those songs and to listen to them and maybe take them live, play them live if you can, at open mics or showcases or something like that. So you've been working the songs through. Sometimes that's just a good way of doing it. But preparing a new album is, I love the excitement of knowing, you know, that there's, or knowing there's going to be another album, you know, and I don't know what it's going to sound like yet because I've only demoed a couple of bits. But I like to, I never finish an album until I've got one song for the next album. It's a rule I have, because then I know that I've got one song that's just hanging around, so I've got to kind of move myself forward. If I just go, they're the best 10 songs I've got and don't have anything else, I've finished. And then I've got to start again. So I often have an album, and then during the process of that album, I'll have a song written that I know is going to be on the next album. And then I feel like, and also I like to design the artwork and have an album title. So I already know that the next matching album is going to be called Midnight for 1 Second. And I already know there's going to be a song on there called Don't Ask, Don't Get Anything Done. So that's kind of the opening track to the next album that I've already done the artwork for. So I feel like I've got that done. I just need to make the album, need to write the songs now. But if I didn't have anything, starting with a complete blank page, I don't know if I would be asked to actually start. So I think it's always good. I think you should always keep moving. If you finish an album, you should always have 1 or 2 songs towards the next album. And then you know that you're still moving as a band. Otherwise, it's very easy to, I don't know how to put it. Let's just say you're using the last 2 or 3 slices of bread, but you know you've got a new loaf next to it. Okay. And sometimes if you want 4 slices of toast, because because like me, you're a bit greedy, you have 3 from that and maybe nick 1 piece of from the fresh loaf, and that keeps you moving. I don't know how I got onto that. How do I get onto these subjects? I wish I could work out how my brain works, but I think probably only a therapist would do that, and then he'd probably need a week off. Yeah.
Grassroots Music UK, in association with Innovation Studios, presents the ultimate one-day workshop for songwriters. Advice and analysis on songwriting techniques and methods, how songs are created, structured, recorded and produced. Tuition, analysis and guidance on how to make a great-sounding album on a bedroom budget, using recording software and digital audio workstation. Learn how effects and plugins work and the most effective way to use them. Mixing and mastering to CD, WAV and MP3. Adding album artwork, tags and songwriter info. Where to have your mastered CD copied in bulk for selling at your shows. How to upload your music to iTunes and digital media. Online radio stations and how to submit your music for airplay. Advice on venues, promotions, showcases and open mic nights in the area. To book a place and to be added to the waiting list, please call 01702 836 649 or email innovationstudiosuk@gmail.com.
But I am enjoying doing these podcasts again. That's a definite. This is a tricky one. This is a tricky one, and it comes from Libby. And Libby says, "Hi, Marcus. I just wondered, what is the best way to behave when a venue tries to book you direct after you've been booked for an agent?" Well, Libby, you should always, if you are booked at a venue through an agent, you should always get rebooked through that agent. Because all that will happen is you will go direct. And you might earn, let's give you some simple mathematics. Not that you need simple mathematics, Libby, but you know, I do, so I'm going to keep it simple. Let's say you're on £100 for a care home in the afternoon, or let's say you're on £300 for a Saturday night. What's going to happen is out of that £300, the agent's probably going to take 15 or 20%. So let's say the agent takes 15%. So out of that £300, you're going to make £255, right? Because the agent's going to get 15% out of that. So you make £255. What happens then is the venue then want to say, can we book you direct? But the reason that they want to book you direct is that 9 times out of 10, they don't want to pay £300. So they want to say, would you do it direct if I gave you £250 or £270? If you take £250, when with an agent you're on £255, you're a fiver down. If you take the £275 and no agent, you've made £20. But that £20 is going to cost you probably 25 shows at £200. So nearly £500, more than that, £4,000. It's going to cost, because the agent's going to go, well, you went behind my back. There's no loyalty. So you've got to weigh it up. If a venue wants to book you, now that's not to say over the years that if I haven't been booked somewhere for an agent and then somebody said, can I take one of your cards? And then literally 2 years later has rung me and then said, can I book you for a party if my nan's 60th or something? That's a separate thing. If on that day they said to me, I want to book you, I would say, phone my agent and we'll talk about it. But there's normally a time frame. And agents sometimes with different venues, sometimes the venue changes an agent. So you might be booked somewhere and you do a lot of work for somebody. And then all of a sudden that agent, the holiday park, signs another contract with another one. And then you've got to try and get on the books for them. So what usually happens with that is I contact the venue and I say, look, I want to come back and play. Who's your agent now? And they say, oh, it's whatever. So I contact the agent and say, I used to play there under Sanso. But this is, you've got to make sure that people are not still putting their acts in there. What you don't want to do, what the agent's job is to get you work. And if you suddenly look at a venue and you go, I'm going to go direct on that, chances are the venue ain't going to give you £300. They want to give you £250 and go direct. And then, what they say, we've done all the paperwork. Sod the paperwork. I'm doing this for less if I do £250. You're paying me less. And I'm winding the agent up and he or she are not going to give me any more work. So the correct way is if you're booked at a venue for an agent and they want you back and you were booked there through an agent, you damn well make sure you go back there through that agent. And if the venue don't want to pay the money, that isn't your problem. That's up to the agent to say to them, okay, well, look, what can we do? Now, the agent very rarely is going to get back to you and say, they'll only pay £250. Would you do it for that through me? Because most of them are pretty strong-willed and they go, no, that's what you want. That's what you pay. Simple as that. We're running a business. People always think that music, you're doing a favour. You're not doing a favour. If you've got someone coming around and doing painting and decorating, or you've got someone coming around, my dad got a phone call to say, come around, can you do our carpet? And you'd say, yeah, I'll come around and do your carpet on Monday. They wouldn't turn around and go, look, if we have you back to do our lounge carpet, would you knock a bit off? You go, no, you want that job done. That's the quote I've given you. That's what it's going to cost you. He wouldn't say, well, we want to have you back, but we don't want to pay £300. He said, well, that's what I've charged you. So if you're booked somewhere for an agent, you go back there for an agent. If it turns out that the agent isn't putting acts in that venue anymore, then I always feel that there's a bit of a time frame. So if all of a sudden the promotional company pulls out of that venue or that venue stops using them on the Monday, you shouldn't be in there on the Tuesday direct. Right? Now, it's not to say you shouldn't be, but I think there should be a certain amount of loyalty. You should turn around and say, look, if you're definitely not in there again, I've been offered it, and what you do is your business. What you don't want, most agents as well, it's worth remembering, particularly at our level, do it themselves. So if they're putting you in a holiday park, then they're putting posters in that holiday park of you, and putting posters in that holiday park or that venue or that care home or that club of all the acts they're putting in there. And then all that happens is they pop down one night or they're booked to perform and they have a look and they see your poster, but it's not through their promotional company. So they think, well, thanks a lot. The truth of it is, 99 times out of 100, you will get found out. So it isn't worth it. Footballers have agents that they, I mean, all right, they're scrupulous and, you know, but footballers have agents that work for them. That's a different thing, but they argue the price. That's what you pay. That's what you want. That's what you pay. No one's going to go straight to, you know, Ronaldo and say, if you sign for us direct without your agent, can we give you, you know, 6 million less? I'd be like, no, get me agent involved. I want that 6 million. We want that between us. He'll take 15%, but I'll come out of there with, you know, four and a bit million. So if you book for an agent, first of all, when you go back there, and every time you go back there, unless there's a falling out with the agent or unless they stop putting acts in there, you should always go back through them because it's a loyalty thing. The agent will then be loyal to you. Any new work that comes in, they'll put your way and you've got to work with it. I've always said, and I've always been honest about it, that acts could survive without agents, but agents can't survive without acts. Right? If there's no acts playing on a Saturday night, the agents wouldn't make any money. But the fact that they are able to ring me up at the start of January and say, look, here's 52 Saturdays for you and I'll give you the details later, saves me a lot of bother, saves me a lot of phone calls, saves me a lot of letters and emails and a lot of time. In the end, it pays for itself. What you give them in percentage, you save in manpower, man hours, messing about trying to get hold of these venues, trying to look at running your own diary. So agents deserve loyalty if they're giving you work. And that's the truth. They do. You don't want to tread on anybody's toes. You don't. That's not how I roll, not how I work. So if somebody books you, an agent books you, if somebody says to you, can I have you direct? You say to them, I can't do that. I get a lot of work from that agent. So if you want me again, can you book me through the agent? And it's as simple as that. Otherwise, you'll shoot yourself in the foot and that might be the only show that you do for that agent and you won't get any more work. You've got to be loyal. Loyal Libby.
Do you have a song in your head? Turn your ideas into full songs. With a team of professional musicians, engineers and producers, we can turn even the simplest demo into full studio quality recordings. Go to www.innovationstudios.com.
Sorry, Libby, I don't know where that came from. Loyal Libby. Alice, hi Marcus, have you ever felt sick on stage? Yeah, loads of times. What happens if you do feel sick on stage? Yeah. It's a tough one because it's one of the strange things because usually when you're on stage, if that's where you should be, sometimes the adrenaline kicks in and you don't feel so rough. I mean, I've been sick as a dog before shows. And then when it's come to step out there, I've had a bucket down behind the speakers just thinking if I need to be sick. Nobody can see you. You've got a big rack of amps. So you can just bend over and be sick in a bucket. I know it sounds really horrible, but you've got to prepare for these things. Sometimes, you've got water tablets. Sometimes you'll have to take medication for something that's not nothing to do with music and you need to keep using the toilet because you've got to drink more. In which case, sometimes it might just be a case, if you've got a full band, you might just say, can you do an acoustic number? I've got to shoot off and have a wee. But if you feel sick, or you've got, let's put it this way, you've got diarrhea, other than very, very, very tight bicycle clips, you've got to just go on and try and do the best you can, you know. And I'm lucky and I'm touching wood big time because I hope it never happens, but I have felt sick on stage. I had to drive to Leicester once, play a place called the Charlotte, and the lads went up in the afternoon and I got someone to drive me up in the evening. And I was so ill. I was so rough. But when it came to go on stage, I just thought, I've got to go on stage. There's nothing I can do. And I got through it. But I did genuinely have. I took one of those waste paper bins or waste bins and just put it behind the speaker. And I thought, if worst case, I just have to throw up into that during a solo or something. Yeah, not pleasant. But fortunately, I'm surrounded by fairly solid musicians. My brother, worst case, could have picked up an acoustic and said, look, I'll just do a couple of songs while you go back and have a swig of water and take a couple of pills or something like that. But it didn't matter. But yeah, I felt sick on stage a few times, and it wasn't nice. And the answer of what to do if you do feel sick on stage, just have a bucket somewhere. That's all I can really say about that one. Lee says, this was a Twitter one actually, should a band continue after a member dies? Yeah, why not? It depends, of course, like Motorhead, when they lost Lemmy. Well, you can't carry on. Although Thin Lizzy seem to be doing all right with that Phil. You see them now and again. Thin Lizzy, they're reforming. You go, they're not reforming, are they? Because Phil Lynott was the main guy, or Lynott was the main guy. So I'm not quite sure if that's... But yeah, there's no reason why not. I mean, I think that the hardest thing about it is, of course, the emotional side of it. Bands are like families. And when you're close as a family, it's, you know, it's really hard. It's sad when you lose somebody like that, if you've shared that with them. I read a book, and it was Gene Simmons from Kiss, and he said, once you've made music with somebody, they're like family. And you might fall out for years, but if they suddenly ring you and say, look, I'm making a new album, would you like to play on it? 9 times out of 10, you go, yeah, because you're there to make music with them and share that with them, you know. I think it's not an issue. But, yeah, should a band continue after a member dies? Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I do know that the management are carrying on with Les Titford, who's been sitting in for Bob Mundy for the last 18 months, 2 years, because Bob wasn't well, and sadly we lost Bob, and his funeral was on the 15th of June. And they're still going, you know, week in and week out, and I don't know whether they're still singing A Caravan on Canvey Island or anything, but maybe they are. Maybe they're still doing it as part of their set, as a tribute, as a nod to Bob. But yeah, there's no reason why, if the rest of the band want to carry on, there's no reason why a band can't carry on. Look at some of the successful bands that have carried on after losing a member, like the Manic Street Preachers. They lost Richie, and then all of a sudden, they're one of the main bands in the world. And the Stereophonics, all right, he'd already left the band, but the Stereophonics lost Stuart Cable, and they're still going on. And Crowded House lost Paul years after they'd split, but they couldn't ever reform with the original lineup, you know. But they reformed the band because the others wanted it, the people wanted it, the music was still there to be made. And why would anybody... You know, I think some people, it's obvious that a band can't carry on. You know, Motorhead, you could never reform the Beatles without John and George. You could do a version of it, but it would go in and make an album, you know. Although there's an AI Beatles album coming out. I'm not sure how I feel about that, this AI business. Personally... My podcast, my opinion. I think it's bollocks, and I think it's an absolute nonsense. The idea of the Beatles was human beings making music with their various thought processes, and maybe some of the processes and maybe some of the stuff that they were taking helped on certain songs. But you can't make an album artificial intelligence. They did an Oasis one. Yeah, it sounded okay. But it's not actually Oasis. And now there's talk of actually releasing this Beatles album. And I think that's rubbish. What's that about? I mean, that's not to say I won't listen to it and go, there's some great songs on the album. But if you're going to do that, then the bootleg Beatles might as well write stuff. There is a band in Scandinavia called ABCD. And they're an AC/DC tribute band, but they write their own stuff in the style of AC/DC. And I think that's brilliant. And I've heard some of it. And I think it's great. Stuff like Mikey's Butt and stuff like that. Seriously, go on there and listen to some of it. ABCD. And they're in Scandinavia. I can't think where they're from. But they are a tribute. And their music is based on AC/DC's. And it's fantastic. You know, it's a nod to them. And I'm sure there are probably other bands out there that have written songs in a certain style that because the band that they tribute to were so important to them. My brother was asked to sing on a couple of things for somebody who was a massive Oasis fan, and he wanted to make an Oasis album that he'd written in that style just for him. So he got my brother to sing Liam parts on it, and he got another guitar player to play Noel parts on it, but I didn't know about it. Otherwise, I would have gone in and done it, but I didn't know about it until the album was nearly done. The guitars were already done. But this guy had written songs in the style of Oasis and wanted Oasis, if you like, or the closest thing to it, to play on it. So he got some of our members in to do it. And, you know, so there's nothing wrong with that. But this AI business, I don't know about that. How do I get onto this? Look, I'll tell you what. I've got to go because I've got to go and get myself ready for a gig. And it's a warm day and I got me shorts on. So go and put my jeans on so I look the part. Look the part. Everybody, if you're going to turn up at a gig, don't turn up in your scruds, all right? Look, I'm out of here. Until I see you next week, you take very, very good care of yourselves, all right? This is Marcus signing off. Don't forget www.innovationstudios.com, innovationstudios.uk@gmail.com, and also at Innovation Studios on Twitter, and also Innovation Studios on Instagram. I think we're on Facebook as well, but I don't know. I don't know. Why would I know? I'm just the person that deals with it all. Yours in Music, signing off. Bye-bye for now.